This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Last week we had a conversation and I think we were talking about, the situation in northern Mozambique, and then we spoke about the Black Sea, the work that is being done there by Turkey, Ukraine and Russia, and the possible conflicts and tensions that are inherent in that region and how much of a threat they are to each country. My guest was Thembisa Fagude, and there was a question that came up to speak to geopolitics, and we thought, because, he said now it will need a bit more time probably to deal with that question. And we thought, okay, let's do that. Let's try and understand what do we mean when we say geopolitics. It's a word that we often use to such an extent that we automatically think everybody knows what it is and why it is important. What are the elements inherent in that particular word, geopolitics? Of course, those who are students of international relations and teachers of it would be familiar with the expositions that are there in understanding this loaded term. But also to sensitize you that today, this morning at 11:30, we now launch Africa Center, and it will be our corner space feature to deliberate on all things happening beyond our borders in the continent and across the seas, just to understand exactly why certain stories, happenings and developments around the world matter for our own well-being as citizens of South Africa, of the continent, and as citizens of the world. Let me welcome Senior Fellow at Africa Asia Dialogue, Thembisa Fagude. Good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Lukona.
So good to have you back. I mean, this term geopolitics, whenever something is happening around the world, we talk, you know, the geopolitical environment might not permit. But when we say geopolitics, what are we talking about?
Well, it's basically politics influenced by geographical factors. That's what geopolitics is. So you'll have, for example, our southern African geopolitical challenges or geopolitical opportunities. So those are all the politics that are prone or influenced by our positioning in geography. As you remember, before, South Africa was geopolitically important because of the trade between the East and West and vice versa. But with the creation of the Suez Canal, South Africa's geopolitical importance was then reduced into not as important as it was before. So it is the importance of politics because of the geographical position of a country.
In fact, we have had many initiatives where we hear of South-South relationships, North-South divide. If you were to take us through and say, what are some of the important nodes of our geopolitical landscape globally that matter today, and why is it that they matter?
Well, today I think what matters is the new the biosphere. Things are changing because of the international or global interests that citizens of the world have. Whereas in the past, geopolitics concentrated mainly on the regional importance of countries, now, because of this biosphere in terms of environment, in terms of environmental degradation, etc., it's no longer the importance of politics are no longer concentrated on regions. The politics are now controlled and directed by artificial intelligence, for example. You will know that the people who are in the state will be interested in actions that are taking place in South Africa, even though they're not citizens of South Africa.
Yeah.
But because they want to promote certain global objectives, that then becomes important. So you are likely to have a polarization even in terms of solidarities within countries, whereas in the past you'll have nationalism, for example, which promoted the interests of countries. Now is no longer going to be the same. Now we're going to have people who are saying we would like to be in solidarity with, say, Finland, because they share the appreciation of environment, they share appreciation of certain justices, whether it's democratic or the other. So there is now cross-pollination and there's internationalization of politics, whereas in the past the self-interest or the national interest took precedence. Now it's not going to be the same anymore because of all of these global challenges that we're facing. I hope I make sense.
No, absolutely. And I'm listening quite attentively because I do want to ask you previously, I mean, the strength of one's army and possibly economy was the premium stock on how you are viewed within the geopolitical landscape. But these days we see quite fairly smaller countries who at times don't even have that much of a defense, but demanding and commanding respectability in certain areas. If you look, for example, as you talk about the biosphere, Sweden, a fairly small country with an inactive army, but boxes quite well on issues of environmentalism and so on, and is looked at in terms of thinking sustainable development. What are the things that now become premium stock for countries insofar as navigating their space through geopolitics?
Well, I think, as I've said earlier on, the first one will be the environmental issues. That's one. I mean, China is coming up with new things on this Belt Road Initiative. What it's actually trying to do is basically globalizing trade. But in so doing, it is going to be encouraging discussions also with the neighboring countries. So you're going to have this railway coming from Chongqing into wherever. But wherever where the borders of the country begins, that the discussion that's going to be taking place in terms of facilitating the trade. So what this does, it creates a new type of conversation in geopolitics. Mm. Whereas in the past, you'll have people cross-border relationships between countries. Now, with the BRI of China, you'll be forced to have countries that are neighboring each other continually talking with the sponsor country. In this term, will be China. So China begins, by the way, to assume a different positioning in geopolitics because it is going to be the main linking country to all of these conversations that will be taking place with where the BRI or the railway system will be going through. Mm. So it's a new world, and including the national solidarity feelings that we often had, where there will be often people acting in unison, things are going to change now because even the allegiances in terms of our political preference and understanding are now international. We don't have people who are just blindly following their own national interests. Now you have people who share interests with people in different countries.
Yeah.
So that in itself also introduces another challenge in our geopolitics and national politics. There is no more this blind solidarity, blind nationalism, with the dictates of the national government. People are now in alliances with members of other countries because they share a certain global challenge or a certain global imperative.
Today we are discussing geopolitics here on the Africa Center with Thembi Safagude. That line is 0861-987-000 if you want to join us on this conversation here on Power Talk at Power 98.7. I mean, Thembi, this is going to have serious implications even for citizens themselves, as you are talking to the fact of, you know, transnational civil society organizations. People are able to tap online and really become a community across the borders and the seas of the world. What conversation should we be having as citizens in trying to understand this new world and how we as citizens can even influence our decision makers with the type of relations they enter into around the world?
Well, I think that's a very, very important question. And I think it also speaks, I hope some people who are decision makers and these kinds are listening, because even our South African foreign policy will have to be tweaked somehow, given these new challenges, the challenges of artificial intelligence, the challenges of big data, the challenges of our kids working with other children throughout the world, or even citizens, for example, having relations with other people across or outside South Africa. Mm. So I think what we need to do at the moment is revisiting our entire foreign policy in South Africa. That it has to be in sync and in line with all of these global social political agencies, which we cannot continue to be, looking only internally for solutions when it comes to foreign relations. Mm. But we can now go and partner with various people in countries around the world in pursuit of our foreign policy. The days of us only looking at South African self-interest are over, because South Africa is, as the state goes, it's not an island, but now it's even worse. If you're going to continue pursuing national objectives and ignoring other international agencies which are impacting on our social, political, and economic positioning, we might just be found ourselves disadvantaged in the long run.
Okay, let us just take Clive on the line, joining us all the way from Pimville. Clive, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Buddha?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. And to your guest as well. Personally, I feel that for Africa, we need to take a nationalist approach. The reason why I say that is because if you take China or Britain or whatever, they've had their period of nationalization. And in a weird kind of way, they're just trying to expand. You know, whenever a country aligns itself, especially a superpower, aligns itself with another country, there's always something that they get out of it. They never do it, Nji, you understand?
Mm.
So I think Africa needs to take a nationalist approach, because if we don't, then we might be in a situation where what we know to be Africa in the long run will be eradicated.
Mm.
And frankly speaking, in terms of resources, I'm just making an example. If Africa was isolated, I'm just making an example,
yeah,
which it will never happen. If Africa is isolated, then and the Tina Siazwana within the nations of Africa, then it's fine. We, frankly speaking, we don't need them. You know, the point is, Africa is still being drained. Africa still is valuable. And what's happening is that whatever changes that happen in the name of solidarity, it's disadvantaging us at the end of the day.
I hear you. Clive, I'll put your question to Thembisa. He's listening in. Thank you very much for joining us. I mean, Thembisa, this is an ongoing conversation, de-linking from the global system. People like Ivan Wallenstein have written about this issue to say smaller countries who are in the periphery should probably de-link so that they come from the periphery and compete with the core countries. But it's not as easy as it is now, given the interconnectedness of citizens around the globe and countries, as you have been saying earlier today.
Well, that's true. I mean, I think it means the Pan-Africanism, for example. I mean, South Africa consists of 54 very, very different countries.
Mm.
Even though South Africa would like to be regarded as an African country, but we're not necessarily a typical African country. We borrow a lot, and we like to promote relationships with the Western countries because of the state of development in those parts of the world. But there's one other issue which I think it's important to mention it. You know, this whole concept of open source.
Yeah.
In other words, where people just go and deposit ideas and they can talk about, you know, it's all free of charge. Now, the isolationist approach of Africans in not getting involved in this international dialogue does not really do us any good, because we tend to lose opportunities from not participating in these global platforms. I think days of nationalism, days of Pan-Africanism are almost over, because there's a lot to benefit, not only in terms of solidarity on matters that involve violations of rights, etc., but also economic opportunities. You know, if you tap into Google, for example, and you realize how much you get from that platform, that's an open source platform.
Yep.
But what Africans are not doing or reluctant on doing is to contribute towards Google to publish as much as they can, so that the material that you produce in Africa can also benefit the world. And in turn, will also benefit Africa, because they will get to understand what we need. They'll get to understand our social, political, and economic needs and desires. And in that manner, we can start a dialogue, a constructive dialogue. But for us to embrace an isolationist approach where we're saying, you know, let us continue to be Africans and let us stick, because if we don't do so, Africa is going to disappear. It's going to disappear anyway. You're going to have one global community which is going to be driven by those who participate in these new platforms, this
yep.
new geosphere that is being in construction. And I think what we need to do will not be doing ourselves favor if we don't participate right now at this elementary stage. because this is being constructed as we speak. And we need to be participators so that at least we can all benefit and dictate our needs and desires in those platforms.
We are talking all things geopolitics with my guest, Thembisa Faguda, talking about the new geosphere. We're just going to take a short break, but if you want to participate, it is 0861-987-000.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mguni. Call Lukhona on 0861-987-000.
And you can tweet me at Lukhona Mguni. Hashtag Power Talk. I mean, Thembisa, to build again on your response to Clive, because it's still an important issue to say when we talk about a resource case, for example, in the continent and how it is still a problem, there are still those actors who are deemed somewhat exploitative and they come and look into for their interests. What is it that African leaders can be doing to demonstrate to the citizens that indeed they are preparing for this new world, indeed they are ensuring protection of our mineral resources so that they are not exploited to deal with questions of poverty in the continent?
I think we've been weak on legislation and the execution of legislation in Africa. And as a result, people come and exploit our situation. Mm. I've argued before that, you know, government lay the playing field and then it's business people who then make sure that they do business. But what we have in many African countries, except for South Africa, this is why we don't have much exploitation by, you know, the mainland China, as is the case in other countries, because we've got systems in place. So I think we need to encourage legislation. We need to encourage the enforcement of legislation. And in that, if we do that, then it will be easy for us to conduct business, because government does not conduct business. Government lay the playing fields for us as citizens to make sure that we conduct business, we protect it, etc. So the first important point is to make sure that there's a strong, effective legislation, and then that legislation can be executed, and those who are found violating those are held to account. It's not the case in many African countries, unfortunately. The other issue, which I think is very important, I hope yes. This answers the question. The other issue I think is very important with us, we need secured energy. In this new world that we're entering in. Whereas most other countries, by the way, are cutting cost of energy. I mean, we are in a situation where the cost of energy is just too exorbitant. If you go to the United States, all of these independent energy producers using the artificial intelligence are actually bypassing the national grid, and they are producing their own energy much more cheaper than what they will buy from government authorities. In South Africa, we're nowhere close, and I'm hoping, or in Africa for that matter,
yeah.
I'm hoping that with the emergence or the failure of Eskom will encourage the emergence of independent power producers, and somehow will use the AI to convert somewhere, and then that can help build the economy and subsidize the energy. I mean, it's quite actually strange that at this day and age, we're still talking about the high cost of energy when where other countries are actually talking about lowering their price of energy. So those I think are very important issues to look at as we move forward. Legislation, which is key, and number two is sustainable and stable energy.
Yeah,
for our economy to move forward
at very affordable prices. Let's go to Castro in Johannesburg, and I'm going to welcome him now. Castro, good morning.
Hi, Steve.
I'm good. How are you?
My question is basic. Now, previously, we've had treaties and agreements that have been signed by old leadership. So my question is based on how much the current young leadership is involved in the African space. Are we in a position where we're seeing young and emerging African leaders negotiating better, or us taking the better or the majority in terms of negotiations? Are the youth leadership impacting the world space?
Okay, thank you very much, Castro. Important question there, looking at how different generations influence this landscape. Tabile, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. My question would have to come around with regards to, I'm going to focus with regards to diplomacy and speak to the state security. The example would be what is happening now in Mozambique. And I'd just like to ask, within, you know, in terms of our foreign policy and diplomacy, and looking at the SADC region in terms of the geopolitics, what then becomes the role of South Africa in ensuring that we are protected? And how sure are we that we are in fact protected from foreign enemies? Because, you know, we've just seen where the US has came to come and rescue Mozambique, and we only send the SANDF, and I don't think it's the jurisdiction of the SANDF, it's the jurisdiction of the state security. So I just wanted to know, perhaps you could offer clarity on the geopolitics and the issue of state security with regards to Mozambique.
Okay. Thank you very much, Thabile. I mean, that last one, Thembisa, speaks a little bit to what we were chatting about last week.
Yeah, sure. I think one of the impediments towards the implementation of our foreign policy is that we tend to piggyback first on SADC, which is South African Development Cooperation One, and then we also piggyback our foreign policy, that is, on the African Union.
Yeah.
So South Africa is hardly taking a standalone position. It will always refer to SADC. If it doesn't refer to SADC, it will refer to AU. I say that that's a very convenient way of running away from taking responsibility.
Yeah.
The case, for example, in Mozambique, we need a South African position, not a SADC position. We need to take what is a South African position? I don't think we have at the moment.
Mm.
We are piggybacking on SADC, and you'll see when the whole thing starts getting out of control, we'll then have AU intervening again. South Africa will take or will mimic the position of the AU. So that's the only challenge we have at the moment.
Yes.
I mean, we have a lot of people who understand the complications of situations in Mozambique, but I don't think the South African government will have a standalone position that will be different or contradict the SADC or the AU position on Mozambique, unfortunately.
Mm. And then quickly, Thembisa, before I let you go, Castro raising the impact of youthful leaders and how they're probably negotiating differently to the elderly ones with their previous treaties or whatever other instruments of diplomacy that have been concretized previously.
I think the youth of today, the millennials, are actually very fascinating because they are controlling the narrative. I was listening to something yesterday about this shared economy, where everything is now going to be shared, whether it's accommodation, it's transportation, all the things that we used to pay lump sum for now are shared. So the new discussion is on open source. The new discussion is on the internet.
Mm.
That's where the young people are discussing issues. And we are most likely now to have this global pact or global treaties between people. It's no longer going to be, you're going to have an overarching global pact,
yeah,
right, that will govern how we deal with environmental impact and effects. We'll have global pacts about issues of economy, et cetera. Transportation, talking about the BRI, which is the Belt Road Initiative,
yeah,
that will involve global pacts because it's going to be dominated by certain, even though it's dominated by China, but most countries will get involved. So there are new discussions that are taking place, and I'm glad to say that young people are leading this discussion.
Thembisa.
And that's where we can get involved, I think.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning on Africa Center. I'm out of time, but always a pleasure talking to you.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.